Darth Vader. Lord Sidious. Darth Maul. This is my apprentice, Darth Maul. Count Dooku. General Grievous.
Kylo Ren? That's, I guess that's the way we're rolling. Hey guys, it's the Star Wars Report podcast. I'm Riley Blanton, your host for this evening. So glad you've decided to join us. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Please delete as appropriate. We've got a great show for you lined up tonight. I'm going to bring into the program my good friend, fellow Star Wars fan, Bethany Blanton. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Hey,
I
are
am
a
glad
big
to be
fan
here.
Of like the pregnant pause.
Hello.
No, welcome to the program. We've got a lot to talk about tonight, do we not? We do indeed. I'll tell you what. It's one of those weeks. We've got more big and significant news in the Star Wars galaxy that affects us here at home, and here to help us talk all about it. It's Mark Herleman.
What the heck was that? Okay. Whistler's happy to be here. I'm just kind of watching him glitch out in the corner. You know, we've seen these really cool articles and stuff about new droids, and apparently it gets to him.
Indeed. And, well, I mean, thus is the way it goes. You just have to work with those ordinary creatures, soccer ball variants and all. But, yeah, as I say, we've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Here we're going to be talking about your emails and feedback. We're kind of continuing the post-trailer era of Star Wars fandom, and that includes, you know, the character names, as I kind of teased at the outset, the weirdest bad guy name ever known in Star Wars history. There's a tradition, and you're flaunting it, J.J. Abrams. You're flaunting it. Just ignore tradition. Why don't you? We've got all these great, obvious... I wouldn't have minded if you had said, hey, it's Darth Bad Guy McGillicuddy. Darth Bad Guy McPherson. Darth Fearlock McHorror Scary Dude Person. See, that's the construct that Star Wars naming has followed for so long, and is evidently not doing so now. But we're gonna talk about it. Character names have been revealed. There have been updates to the Disney theme parks. There's a bunch of new celebration news. Star Wars Celebration news as well. But the big news story is the character names. But we're going to talk all about that stuff right after we begin the news segment.
Something to report.
Some pleasure. I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
You send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
A quick update on, these Disney parks that folks have been talking about. I don't know. Ever since the announcement of the new Star Wars trilogy, Star Wars fans everywhere have been asking themselves, well, when is it time for new Star Wars land at Disney? It's time for Star Wars Galaxy. Forget Tomorrowland. Forget Magic Kingdom. Star Tours is no longer enough. We need a Star Wars theme park proper. And Disney is evidently going to bless us with one. We finally have some word on the subject. But it's not quite what we think it is, which I just realized that was, I just pulled an Upworthy right there. Disney announced Star Wars attraction and you won't believe what they said. It doesn't really work in podcasting, does it?
Not really.
In concept, it works.
Click link to hear more.
So basically, Bob Iger was on the old Televisión. Excuse me, talking to Variety in an interview.
And yeah, Riley, what's a television?
A television. What is this television you speak of? He's talking to Variety and basically said, quote, "There will be a much larger Star Wars presence in our parks globally, but we want to do this big, which takes time to do it right. I didn't want to come in and just say, I just saw the movie and there's nothing in that movie in this attraction." Referring, of course, to the new films. So what evidently is going to be the case is that the Disney parks will have Star Wars rides and attractions for sure, but aren't necessarily going to exclusively be based off of the classic trilogy. They want to wait and give it time to bring in the new trilogy. So that when you walk into Star Tours, you might see the soccer ball droid chirping there at you saying, what's up? And you're like, hello, soccer ball droid. And soccer ball droid's like, hey, why don't you get on the ride? And you're like, all right, I'm going to do that. That's basically, that's going to be how it goes.
All right, all right, all right.
What I wouldn't get for Matthew McConaughey to have a role in an upcoming Star Wars film. But yeah, so that's basically it.
Well, I just got to ask you, okay, when I've gone and done the Star Tours experience, I like the fact that it had an in-universe feel. I like that when you go to do the fast pass, you got to go up to a gonk droid, that kind of stuff. So setting it in the new trilogy kind of makes a lot of sense, because then you could showcase the old stuff like as like going into a section with the History Channel, you know, learn more about the Old Republic and how they fought against the Separatist Army before the rise of the Empire. And, you know, have a section like that, or then you go into another section, learn more about the Galactic Civil War between the Empire and our heroes, the Rebels. You know, and you could have something like that as it leads into the newer type of stuff. Like, I hope they do something in that regard where it's like an in-universe feel, where it's not just like where you walk from one room and you're like, you know, in episode one area, and then all of a sudden you're in episode three or four. But there's so many different ways you could play that with a Disney feel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the approach Disney should take, and I think what Bob Iger's wanting to do, is make sure that they have a prominent presence of the new films at the attractions and at the theme parks, but not necessarily, I don't think that, because a lot of the headlines read, new Star Wars attractions to have absolutely no reference to the previous films, basically, is how people were reacting. And they're like, wait, no Ewoks, no Stormtroopers?
I don't think that's what they're saying.
No, what Bob Iger's basically saying is that they want a prominent presence of the new films, but certainly, if by no other virtue of the fact that the new films are obviously going to be so heavily influenced by the original trilogy, we know those themes are going to carry into these new Star Wars parks. And there have been so many rumors. This is new.
Which,
stories
side
the
note, as mm-hmm. as a part of this article, Iger, quote, revealed the pressure Abrams has been under to deliver a return on the studio's investment. Quote, I keep telling him this is a $4 billion movie. We need to treat this very special. It's, quote, an unbelievable privilege and unbelievable responsibility. Wait to take this, wait for it, jewel, and treat it in a way that is respectful of its past, but brings it into the future.
Well, you guys just say I love Iger. Where they talked about having the Millennium Falcon, where you could kind of come up and meet Chewie.
Yeah.
I think of that, and I think, you know, if they were to do something like that still, which I would love to see them do. I would love to be able to come to a place where they had a full size Millennium Falcon that I could walk through. But to tell us now up front that if that was to go forward, expect to see it with the new sensor dish. You know, that'd be kind of a slick way of going about that. You know, I would be okay with that. New sensor dish on the Millennium Falcon, I get to walk through the Millennium Falcon, okay. I mean, that's something for me I would love to see at the Disney theme park.
Absolutely.
You know, they've got to have some interaction in that regard. To be able to walk through the Millennium Falcon, to take pictures in the hallways and things like that, I think for most fans, that would probably beat most of the rides they could come up with besides Star Tours itself. Heck, even probably Star Tours.
Well, absolutely. And I think that kind of Star Wars central experience is what they're looking for. They're not just looking for like another ride or two. They want like the Star Wars section of Hollywood Studios or the Star Wars section of Magic Kingdom or whatever it would be. Again, I'm not nearly the Disney insider that one Teresa Delgado is, who's probably all over this. Cause I mean, and this is off of memory, but I remember like reading stories about how, you know, there's certain rides that they're looking at retiring so that they can get, you know, the Star Wars place in there. So, there's so many cool ideas, again, of those who've listened to the podcast for any amount of time kind of know my, to use a biblical reference, my Saul moment where I was struck blind and had a sudden conversion and came to the light, realizing how cool the Disney parks are. Which I kind of, to be honest, let's be honest, I've kind of overplayed.
Which me, Aaron, and Teresa are all still gloating about.
Which,
just
to
by
be
the way.
Honest, which, as I would say, exactly, to be honest, I've overplayed a little bit sometimes for dramatic effect, because you, now at this point, I'm in the position to where now you guys like to rub it in my face, which, fair enough, I kind of asked for it. But,
a regular Disney Grinch, you were.
You know, that's funny, because I was the same way on our first trip down. I was like, I'm 33. I've never been here. I don't care. I don't have to go now. They'll grow up fine. And then we come back and we're like, we can go back. I can't wait to go back there again. That was so magical. That's some good fun, man.
It's, I mean, it is a really, really great experience that is curated so well, unlike any other theme park experience I've ever been to. That being said, it is a theme park. I mean, it's not the end all be all of what makes Star Wars cool. So it's like, for me, I would never look as much forward to like a theme park experience as I would actual great story or contents like television show or the upcoming films itself, which sometimes seems to be the case with some fans. That's like your thing. Like if you like the theme parks, that's what you're most excited about, which is cool. But yeah, you should say something, Mark.
We each got our own little niche. There is something to be said though about it being a business. You know, I mean, there's that whole shareholders aspect. You know, if you're a shareholder and you're getting those, you know, this is what we're doing with your money kind of letters and stuff, you know, are they getting tidbits into the directions and stuff? Cause I remember some of the earliest rumors came from those type of letters. You know, the first reports that they were going to do a Star Wars land in Disneyland and stuff came from those investor letters. So it's almost hey guys, why don't we all just invest in Disney and just get the straight from the mouth.
Well, I mean, if it would work, that'd be pretty cool. I do remember that leak. I forget exactly the details of it, but I do remember that being the case at one point. But yeah. Now I'll tell you what, it'll be exciting. Hopefully, it's sooner than later. I would hope that whatever they're unveiling, maybe perhaps they'll have it ready to roll next year. You know, the year of the film's release. But from the language that Bob Iger used, I think we may have to wait a little bit longer.
I would think waiting longer would probably be the better way. Give the fan base time to absorb the new movies, have an idea of what it is they're seeing when they show up at the park.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, Mark Hamill's on the news. Beardwatch lives, sort of. this is from... By the way, the hashtag Beardwatch was pretty epic on Twitter for some time. This is straight from Club Jade. Mark Hamill talked about Episode 7 and his beard with Yahoo.
Are you sure it wasn't Mark Hamill's beard doing the talking? It's taken on a life of its own.
Twitter account for Mark Hamill's beard? There sure is.
It's like Shatner's wig.
Exactly. but yes... Interestingly, he talks about the soccer ball droid, which Mark, you mentioned this in the pre-show.
This was the one that really got to me because they were asking him about his son and it, and Hamill, he's laughing. He goes, "I'm sure he loved the new little droid that's a rolling ball. I'm sure he wants it under his the Christmas tree this year. They never cease to amaze me with what they're capable to come up with." You know, I said, "How are you going to top R2-D2, the most adorable droid in movie history?" And then they have this new one. I can't even tell you his name yet, but you'll see it in the trailer. And then it goes on. He talks about how when they're demonstrating how they did this thing live on set, because it's not CG, that's a live prop, I was just amazed. They let me play around with it. He laughs again. I was running all around at the creature shop in Pinewood. I'm telling you, it was an absolute delight, which immediately got me thinking, like, could we be seeing our own versions of this droid for consumer use soon? Like, okay, I wasn't a fan of seeing it right off the bat, but I honestly thought it was CGI. Now knowing that that's an actual prop that even Hamill himself was able to play with, I'm like, wait, how easy can the R2 builders build one of these? And how soon can we get it on shelves? I mean, you know, we were talking before the show about how Rebel stuff isn't hitting the shelves and things like that. It's like, I would love to see something like this to be able to give to my kids for Christmas come next year.
That would be amazing. Which, by the way, you know, the other part of that story is just hearing Mark Hamill's just wandering around the set, just kind of playing around with the R2s.
Yeah.
Which I could totally see, by the way. Having seen him at Star Wars Weekends this year, he is just kind of a goofball. Like, he's the anti-Harrison Ford.
He's got the remote control in his hand, and Daisy Ridley's like, "Can I have a turn? Can I have a turn?" He waves his finger to sign off the droid you're looking for.
Yeah. Well, you know what? He also had a lot of praise for the trailer and for the younger co-stars. But you know who has not seen the trailer is one George Lucas, which I did want to just bring up as a...
I didn't watch the trailer.
Yes. George has not been watching the trailer or following that kind of stuff because he takes spoiler-free to an extreme, this is my interpretation, but he said that he wants to experience the movie in the theater when it comes out, which I think is pretty interesting. People are taking it and specifically
George
an article.
Lucas hates Star Wars.
I know. That was almost, well, that was close to one headline that I read. It was like, no, he's not that detached. He's not, it's not that he doesn't want to see it or he doesn't like JJ or anything like that.
My favorite headline was from page 6, which is read the following. George is just not into you, that into you, JJ. And I thought,
yeah. So I wanted to bring that up, and it was like that was a pretty big misrepresentation of what he said, and also the fact that Lucas is famously known for his love of the theater experience. I mean, he basically has wanted theaters to be revamped and their technology improved since day one. He is a huge theater fan, so
yeah.
Well, and think also, I mean, he's also stated that he's never got to see Star Wars theatrically. You know, he was always involved in the creative process. So when he got to sit down, it wasn't the same experience for him. So it makes sense in this time
to distance yourself as much
as possible so you can get that experience that you've never had with the franchise that you created.
Yeah, he finally gets the chance to do that, which I think is pretty cool. But he talked about, you know, being on the phone a lot with JJ and other such things. I think he's enjoying it.
Somebody needs to make a heartwarming, like, personal documentary about George Lucas that's sympathetic, that, like, chronicles his time of, you know, you remember that Forbes interview with him where he famously, this was a mere few months before he put the company up for sale to Disney, where he just said, what they asked about more movies, or I believe it was asking about more movies, and he's like, no, I don't plan on making any more movies. He said, why would you... I forget the exact quote, but it was kind of sad to read.
They're just going
to
hate it.
Yeah, why would I do that, make something when people would just hate it?
See, and I remember when that one came too, because I remember there were a lot of fans that took it like, well, George hates the fanboys. And then there was the other side of it where I was like, you know, I could see him saying that in a joke, a legitimate joke, because he's right. Whatever he was going to do, there would be a contingent of fans that were going to hate it. Just as you're going to have fans that are going to love it. I mean, that's how divided a fandom we are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was kind of sad to read, though. It kind of...
And honestly, just from the way he said it, I don't think he was joking. I mean, he can be a little bit of a straight-faced joker, but
let's be honest.
not like that, I don't think.
But let's be honest. Like, George, at this point... I mean, he's had the last laugh, right? Yeah. I mean, think about it.
He's like, 72 issues of number one from Marvel, suckers.
Well, no, seriously, like, George Lucas, someone needs to write this article right now. George Lucas has had the last laugh because he went through 15 years of a really vocal minority of fandom just eviscerating any Star Wars project that he was involved in creatively. And... when he finally sells the company, his legacy lives on in Star Wars. He gets married to the woman of his dreams. He has a family now. He moves off to beautiful California and Chicago with these like two living in the two beautiful cities and ranches. And to end it all, basically when you read, you know, some of these interviews and stuff, he gets to see someone else carry the torch on without the pressure of him being blamed for any perceived mistakes of the property.
But he also has some creative influence, too.
Yeah. And even
from what he said himself in that article.
And even if he didn't, like, say it's a lot of people say, oh, well, it's just like lip service. He's not really influencing JJ, right?
As him. If, like, one... See the Clone Wars.
Well, and look at, like, it's as if people think that one phone call with J.J. Abrams, like, degrades the quality of The Force Awakens. Like, they're afraid that, like, each little, I think there should be more Ewoks. You know, each little suggestion is just, like, the quality that sinks down. But no. Like, and I was reading, because, like, the new Hobbit film comes out, and it's getting pretty good reviews. Not nearly as well as
Really excited.
No, it's really looking forward to it. And it's getting pretty good reviews, on it as far as critically goes. But, like, one negative review, which of course you know is what you do when you click on Rotten Tomatoes, you have to find one good one and one bad one so that you kind of get the representation of both sides when you're reading Rotten Tomatoes, or at least that's my typical approach. And the one bad one is like, You know, it is, it's a little too gratuitous in terms of the action. It's a little, it stinks of George Lucas. And I was like, I can't escape it! I can't escape it!
Too gratuitous? Is there such a thing? I think anyone getting gratuity is going to be appreciative of that.
Well, in The Hobbit, I think. Anyway, point being, though, that George Lucas has had the last laugh. I think that's the end of that story there. Where were we? We totally, we were talking about Mark Hamill. So yeah, Mark Hamill was bumbling around on set playing with Astromex. George Lucas got the last laugh.
A droid that we actually have potentially named, no doubt.
That's true, and we have names. The names have arrived, which is the, I think that's the next, no, well, I want to touch on this. There have been some Star Wars Celebration announcements. I'll just cover these briefly. Basically,
yeah.
The collector's panels were announced, which I didn't look at because I don't collect. The
shame on you. You don't collect. What do you mean? I've seen those statues on your desk.
I mean,
I don't collect much.
It doesn't count.
Let's state that right. I don't collect much. You got two, right? Two?
I have been in Steve Glosson's recording studio. I am not a Star Wars collector.
Yes, but you have literally five shelves of different Star Wars stuff in your room.
Yes, it's like two Lego sets, three action figures, and some Atactics. It doesn't count.
Don't forget the Wookiee doll.
Is this like intervention? Like,
Riley,
you're affirming my actual memory.
That's where you start. You're at the starting point, my friend. You just got to embrace it. You got to discover which niche about what you're collecting that you like. I mean, for
Ain't
me, it's
happen.
The ships. At one point, it was the two packs of the comic variant packages, but there's that thing. I mean, so far you're into those statues, and I got to admit, dude, I saw that one and I was drooling. I was
Mark, it ain't happening. I'm standing on the ledge, the collector ledge, the collector cliff, and I am too chicken to take that jump.
I will not blame you. On another hand, I mean, you know, we know some people, me and Nathan Butler, online that they're the completionists, and this whole move to Marvel has got us just cringing for our friends, the completionists.
I saw
when you're looking at Star Wars number one, and there are 72 variants of number
one. I saw Nathan's
you're breaking
just
the
like
bank, man.
Nathan Ooh. Put this amazing cringing Facebook post about 72 variants of the Star Wars Marvel series, and I could just like feel his pain, like because I like I have no interest in like. I've read Star Wars number one.
I've read
the comic, but I certainly would never read it twice. I certainly wouldn't buy two different copies of it.
I think that Riley is having an identity crisis.
I think
that Riley is secretly turning into a collector and
I'm
is questioning
confident.
Riley collect
and is questioning this fact. Just like Riley earlier was teasing me about, I was actually reading a piece of fan fiction. It's like the third piece I've ever read, maybe fourth or fifth. I don't know. But he was like, oh no, not fan fiction, jokingly, said the person who was listening to a podcast. No
See, the
doubt.
The person who's pointing more fan fiction to me than I've read myself. Wait, Riley's dissing on the fanfic?
Said the person. No. He said it jokingly. Said the person who turned a piece of fanfic into an audio drama.
That might have happened. Let's say for the sake of argument that possibly was one of my first forays into Star Wars fan audio ever. Let's just pretend.
It was glorious. It isn't because I narrated or anything.
It is certainly, absolutely isn't because Mark Curlman narrated large swaths of it.
Mm-hmm. I was even a youngling.
You were.
You know, the fan fiction, though, I got to admit, like, because Riley's the one that pointed me to a lot of really good stuff. I was one that always kind of shied away from fan fiction. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know more of the continuity stories. But now with Legends on hold and stuff and possibly never getting anything else, Legends' only way to continue to grow with stories will be through fan fiction. And there's a part of me that wants to find some of them really good authors out there. I mean, Jedi Rita that wrote the one Rest Thou Softly that me and Riley did. Oh my gosh, man. I mean, that story was dialed into the EU. I mean, there were aspects of it. It was set during episode 3, but the way it was written, if you had read Dark Nest, you knew exactly the scene that was being referenced in Dark Nest in this story. And it was glorious the way that it tied the two together. And I love that. So, you know, to find people out there that take that time and that passion to continue to write stories that, you know, me as an EU fan feel need to be told in Legends still. it'd be cool to find them out there. And I know they're out there. There's a huge community, so much so that that's the biggest reason why I always shied away, because there's a lot of gems and there's also a lot of not so great literature.
Well, Mark, I will give you a quick tip. If you're looking on fanfiction.net, you can sort stories by the type of stories that they are. So like you could go and click on Star Wars stories. You could sort by characters, and then you can sort by reviews or by favorites. And so then the one with the most reviews and favorites will get to the top.
You said that's fanfiction.net?
Yep.
Oh, yep. I'll have to check that out. That sounds fun.
Yeah, that's how we found the Jedi Rita piece, if I'm not misremembering.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This piece of information is brought to you by StarWarsReport.com. All right, guys, we do have one more news story. I'm pulling a Steve Jobs, and there's one more news story right after this.
This is the Star Wars Report podcast. Boring conversation, anyway.
Oh, I disagree. I think it's quite a lively conversation. It's about to get a lot more lively. That's right.
I just say I want to hear Joe scat to that. That would just be fun.
That would be amazing. Oh, man. So the names of the Star Wars characters seen in the trailer have been released. In fact, like if you were the characters in the Star Wars trailer, you would be singing Jim Croce's I Got a Name, of which I wish I had. I wish I had this.
That was slick.
Oh, of course. It's because I don't have it. I was going to say, if only I had like Jim Croce all queued up and ready to go. All right, here we go. Like the pine trees. Straight from Mashable.com. Well, no, excuse. Straight. Take two. From The Hollywood Reporter, my favorite publication. It's the character names for Star Wars The Force Awakens. And I carry it with me like my daddy did. That's right. Oscar Isaac is, drumroll please. Thank you. Poe Dameron.
Dameron.
Dameronian.
Dameron.
Dameron?
That's what
Dameron? I thought. Dameron.
Dameron.
I thought it was Talone Cardi for the longest time. Like, really?
Cardi.
Oh, goodness.
It's
that's
two
funny.
R's. It's got to be a silent E. If it's two R's, it's got to be the silent E mark. It's the card.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, my dad's like, you kept calling the ship the wild card. I'm like, I don't even know.
He is an X-Wing pilot, and his name is Poe Dameron. Someone with a cloak's name is, drumroll please. Kylo Ren.
Now, that one was interesting because they say his lightsaber, and I honestly thought that was going to be the lady from Game of Thrones.
I'll put it this way.
They could just be blatantly lying.
One thing I think we've learned about J.J. Abrams and his productions is that he would never, ever deceive the fans.
He would never try to convince them one character was another.
I don't think that would be totally out of character for J.J. Abrams. Daisy Ridley is, drumroll please, Rey, we don't know her last name.
Skywalker.
Solo.
We do not know.
We don't know. No, it's not a spoiler. It's not
just Rey.
Stop your emails now. It's not a spoiler.
Calrissian!
Yeah. Her name is Rey. Simply Rey. And only Rey at this point. Rey of Sunshine. Rey of Gold.
Well, single drop of rain.
Thank you, Mark. That's exactly what I was singing earlier today. what is it? A drop of golden sun. Poe's the name of an X-Wing pilot. Rey's the name of Daisy Ridley. Kylo's the weird name of the guy with the cloak. And then we finish it off with John Boyega.
That's Finn.
Thank you.
Well, we finish it off with Chumbawamba.
The puns. Oh, the puns begin.
Yes. I don't know. I want to go back to someone with a cloak, as the Hollywood Reporter calls
person. That's the one that jumps out most to me. What's your thoughts?
Kylo Ren. My thought, I mean, I know a lot of fans have been speculating that this is a code name, that this is essentially an interim fake name. I would not be surprised if it is. I also wouldn't be too terribly surprised if it's not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. My thought on that is that this person never did strike me as a traditional Sith to begin with. It's not a traditional blade. To me, since the beginning, I've thought that blade looks unstable. As cool as it looks unstable, like there's something wrong with it. And there's something wrong with the character holding it, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, because it's a dark side blade. But this character just does not strike me as a rule of two traditional Darth.
So this is the reason. Kill your master. You know that's all the boring old stuff. Let's get into the real.
This is Indiana Jones, guys. This is the wannabe person that's out there collecting really cool artifacts, trying to save the culture, and they kind of got a little corrupted along the way.
If this is a dark side Indiana Jones, I will be so happy. That is such a cool concept.
We'll bust out the whip.
Dun da dun 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 da dun 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 dun, like that. Yeah, exactly. I would
Andy Serkis wasn't the only character playing two in this one. So was Harrison Ford.
Do you think could be the Kylo Ren is like a cover name and he's a representation of the Wills? Or do you think that Wills would be represented in a more ethereal fashion?
Is it possible? I mean, I know he's wearing a big black cloak of doom and, has
the bandages and the ragged look. I mean, it is like a really kind of Force Unleashed look.
Yes, but the main character of the Force Unleashed was actually a good guy in the end.
Spoiler alert. It's a video game. It's only been out 4 years.
Here's my point. What if he's not an actual bad guy?
That's what I was wondering. I mean, now that they're saying that this is Kylo Ren and his lightsaber, but I was originally thinking, like, what if this was Luke defending himself and that was the only weapon available, you know?
I don't think it's Luke. I mean, I've heard that.
I mean, I think it's pretty clear. If this is a legitimate set of cards, it can't be Luke now. Unless, like you said, JJ's doing a fast one.
Yeah.
Which would be very like him.
This is a really far outside the box way to go that shady, though, right? I mean, you're printing a product onto a card that's being packaged and sold to places to a consumer base that's completely based off of lies. I mean, even Lucas, when he had the Revenge of the Jedi, when they were doing Return of the Jedi, you know, those posters only made it to, you know, a certain part of the process before it was cut. I mean, have these hit shelves yet? Do we know?
Well, it's as if the marketing decision behind the way they chose to announce the behaviors is somewhat confusing and seems unexpected. Would you say so, Mark?
Yes and no. I mean, I remember getting a lot of details from the backs of the carded action figures. You mm-hmm. would get a lot of background information as to where characters were coming from and stuff like that. That was where a lot of your spoilers came from. I mean, in that regard, it would almost make sense as to that's why Rebels figures aren't hitting the shelf, but that's a different subject. But I don't know. This to me seems like something that they would legitimately end up getting out there. And it could get out, like in this case, way before the movie. But this is really way out there. Like, I don't know if you would really want to be putting that stuff out there. These cards haven't hit the shelves and won't be hitting the shelves for another 6 months, then maybe that would make a little more sense. And these images were just the ones that happened to get released to kind of, you know, sensationalize the cards. Oh, hey, you want to get these cards? They got really cool details. I mean, it's weird because I don't think I've ever seen anything put cards out this early, you know, a whole year plus.
Well, here's how it went down. Lucasfilm did was they wanted to announce the character names, with the exception of the last names of obviously whoever Boyega and Ridley are playing. Mm-hmm. And so they chose
Finn
what they
and
did.
And Rey remain last
to
nameless.
To do it, they did these kind of these cool vintage card style character cards and did these mock-ups and released them as images to Entertainment Weekly, who made the official announcement, or the I guess official as you can be announcement, with these vintage card looks, which I think is interesting in one hand, but kind of kind of patronizing on the other hand, right? Because you have these because to answer your earlier assumption, Mark, these are not actual cards. These are just, they just made it for the announcement. Because it was kind of one of those things of like somebody in a marketing room said, hey, people like those vintage cards, right? And they're like, yeah, that's cool. Let's do the announcement that way, which is fine. It's like, it's what you do when you want to have a cool way to announce it. It's not just like, oh, here's another press release, stars.com. But on the other hand, I don't like the way they did it because by doing it on the vintage cards, it's kind of threefold. A bit of a distraction from what the actual cool part of the announcement is, but that's kind of the minor thing. But the other thing is who they chose to do it with. What they brokered a deal with Entertainment Weekly to make it an exclusive announcement through Entertainment Weekly's website. And that's when they did this kind of character card. So they're not really marketing it towards the Star Wars community. It's more of the general entertainment movie film community in general. And
which does make sense.
And that those people who aren't like Star Wars when it came out in the 70s and 80s, but aren't necessarily already huge Star Wars fans right now. So what they're kind of doing, from my perspective, I mean, that could be seen as a positive thing of trying to get the word out to people who otherwise wouldn't do it. But I think the converse that you have to think about is the fact that I think on one hand, it's almost a little bit, I mean, insulting is too strong of a word, but it's kind of like ignoring the hardcore fan community by letting a trade magazine, you know, that you typically see at a checkout line in your grocery store. Those are the people you're choosing to release this huge, momentous news to. I think it would have been more cool if they had chosen to do something like have an actual Lucasfilm spokesperson, or better yet, you know, like J.J. Abrams or one of the producers or something, or better yet, the actors themselves do like a cool announcement video or like a bonus clip or something like that. But instead, this kind of, for me, reeks of a little bit of the let's push it on the people who we need to get you to forgive Star Wars. So we're going to sell this to the crowd that isn't hardcore Star Wars fans because we need to sell this film. It's kind of like all of the, whenever I read a headline about all the wonderful practical effects that are going to be in this, unlike those crappy prequels, which is one of the worst. I mean, if you don't like the prequels, fine. But if you're saying they don't have enough practical effects, something's wrong with your head because they had tons of practical effects. But that's a side note. So that's kind of my perspective.
The styling of that card, though, you know, it throws back to the old 77s, which goes to that, you know, the kids that were 8, 9, 10 in 77. You know, it heralds back to a time in your childhood, you know, those people. I mean, sure. It's not mine. I was about 5 years later than that. But those ones, the ones that did collect those original cards, this is calling to them kind of thing. And I get what you're saying. It's a twofold. Like, if you are that group, it's great for you. You know, it's bringing it back. Oh, the Star Wars that I love. But if you were in that group that really loved the prequels and you really loved the newer stuff that it seems to be that there's a public perception were considered a failure in a lot of ways, which I don't think, but I do see a lot of TV shows expressing that opinion, which I disagree with. You know, but it does kind of give you that feeling to those fans that you're being overlooked to go back to that older time, which puts out that perception that this other stuff was a failure, which I'm with you. I don't think it was a failure. I think the prequels were a success. They just, a lot of people had a lot of perceptions because of how long a time it took between trilogies. And the conflicting ideas of what Lucas may or may not do due to statements he may or may not have said or directions he was planning when he said it. I mean, it's interesting in that regard how the way that they market this can be interpreted in so many different ways.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, that yes, they are definitely capitalizing on marketing this as it's like the Star Wars you used to love. But that's kind of the extreme end, because if you think about it, the prequels were much more modern films, even though, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I mean, the newest one is almost a decade old now. But I think that The Force Awakens will have a lot more of the prequels' influence than people really think. I mean, a lot of the marketing, a lot of the communication with the fan base has been really, well, modern.
Yeah.
I mean, very even the broad saber is pretty modern. That's something you would expect
or
to see.
Or new, at least, yeah.
Yeah, you would. I would expect that to see more in the prequels than I would in the OT, for instance. Maybe that's just me, but to me, the feel of the teaser trailer, yes, it had a lot of OT callbacks in it, but it had some stuff that really felt like the prequels to me as well. The broad saber being one and the droid being one. And I honestly think that fans read a little too much into it, by thinking, you know, oh, this is, it's going to be
it's
so
the best
much
thing
like,
ever,
it,
man.
No, these it's going to be all like the original trilogy. I don't think it will be. And I don't think that they're even stating that with the marketing. I think the people who think that are just reading the marketing to be what they want it to be.
I'm going to make a statement. And I want us to process it all together. It's going to be like a little group therapy session. Let's jump into the mindset of someone who didn't like the prequels and likes, the original trilogy more, which is a swath of fans. I mean, it's the minority, but it's not everyone.
Well, we gotta love Gritty, because that is one thing that the original trilogy had that a lot of people said that the prequel trilogy went away from.
Well, and
but
Mark,
sleek and shiny.
Let me just pose this to you and Bethany. What made the original trilogy great? Let's forget the original trilogy. Just jump back to the first film, that 1977 experience that so many people remember indelibly as a vast and important changing point in their culture, society, and personhood as an individual. That 1977 film, what made that movie, what makes Star Wars A New Hope great, is a farm boy, a scoundrel, and a crazy old wizard. Not the vintage card you got for Christmas that year. And so it's sort of like, even people, because Entertainment Weekly, I mean, they are exactly representative of the kind of the Hollywood insider film buff era folks who just trash Star Wars for 15 years. And then it just kind of smells, something is rotten in the state of Alderaan when those are the people that you want to give your exclusive to. It's sort of like you don't need to pander to the entertainment trade magazines. And by extension, I think that segment of the popular culture to sell the Star Wars film. And that's kind of, I think, what I don't like about the announcement coming through Entertainment Weekly. The vintage cards are kind of like,
I feel like it's, that kind of marketing is apologizing for the prequels?
No, not it's not even directly apologizing. It's just it's embracing a side of popular culture that thinks it's way more important than it is, right? And that's kind of what I don't mind Lucasfilm doing the cool vintage cars. That's fine. I just kind of mind the reaction of the people whose audience is made, who's Entertainment Weekly's audience, right?
So like, it's
all gonna be amazing
so...
now, man. It's a vintage card, man.
Well, you got to go to their site to find out about it, which means that you get to have the comment section for the world that goes to that site, which I get where you're talking about there. That's a site you wouldn't necessarily want to read most of the comments for the type of movies. And you know, if it was like at StarWars.com, you might actually get more, you know, like-minded individuals seeing it, talking about it, commenting on it, and having that community sense. But you go to Entertainment Weekly, and then it becomes what feels like a hate fest.
Take a page from, we've said this before, from Peter Jackson, and do something like a cool video of John Boyega and Daisy Ridley making the announcement, or J.J. Abrams doing it, or a hangout. Or something like that. You know, just something that's community driven and not something that feels like it's trying to please the entertainment / Hollywood segment of popular culture.
Well, and I think they are trying to do that in a way, in the fact that they are trying different marketing strategies. They are trying the little Twitter announcements, the little back and forth with, you know, the director of you know, yeah. Batman versus Superman.
Well, like the Millennium Falcon video with the Batman vehicle. Right. Like, that's pretty.
That's a modern way to do things.
And that's the way you want to do it.
That does not scream old school. That screams, like, you know, movies in the past 2 or 3 years. So to me, they are trying a multitude of different marketing strategies. And I think it is a certain segment of fan and popular culture that clings to the older school style of marketing that is also being used and saying, this is what we're going to get. And I think they're fooling themselves. I really think they are. I think that The Force Awakens will be some OT, some PT, and a lot of new.
And
I think people who are hoping to see The Empire Strikes Back again are mistaken.
Yeah. It's you're right.
Well, the most dangerous thing we can do is go into these movies with preconceptions.
And that's what people are beginning to do. And it's scary because I almost think that that's why they're not heavily marketing it in a lot of ways. There are a lot of secrets about this movie, and I don't see that that will be changed much leading into the film. And I think that's because they're terrified of people's preconceptions.
Yeah.
I think JJ is. I mean, JJ dealt with this with Star Trek.
That he did. I mean, I thought.
Well, and that came with him too because of that. I mean, there was that contingent of fans that, oh no, we're mixing the genres. Frack that Star Trek junk, man. You can't have that guy over here. He's gonna dilute the awesomeness. Like, there are people that were really ticked off to hear that.
Yep. I mean, there was that segment of the community, and there's a very large swath of that same popular culture, you know, Entertainment Weekly, part of the online fandom or community that turned totally on Star Trek Into Darkness, which I personally enjoyed equally to the original, to the 2009 Star Trek. I thought it was a great film. It was tense. But for some reason, like, the internet decided it's not good anymore, right? And that's kind of what I think that same approach is going to be happening to The Force Awakens.
Well,
I have to agree with that. I mean, especially when you put it with that Star Trek Into Darkness, because I am a Trekkie, and my dad was a Trekkie. That was the first sci-fi I got into. So I know just as many science fiction fans that are Trekkies only as I do that are Star Wars. And so that whole back and forth goes back, you know, all the way there. Using that example is prime for me because I have friends that I would have thought would have loved the second one that absolutely hated it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's amazing when you come across the people because they all have legitimate reasons why they feel the way they do.
It's
like sometimes I just can't get with them. I'm like, man, that's a great ride. Those homages were awesome.
Yeah. And one thing I think that plays into this is actually the way the culture has shifted since the original Star Wars films. I mean, The Empire Strikes Back was not exactly a lighthearted film.
And it was actually not very much liked originally when it first came out. Think about that.
The old Star Wars movies have a charm and an innocence in a lot of ways, and a good versus evil, and the good guys win, that really went out of vogue for a long time. Dark and depressing and emo/anti-heroes became in vogue for really a long time. And it's only in the past 5 years or so that you see a lot more movies coming out that, I mean, would Captain America have worked 10 or 15 years ago? I'm not sure that it would have with the culture then. And so have people who grew up loving the original trilogy. But then in their late teen and adult life, they live primarily in a media culture of cynicism and a media culture of,
you might say, snark.
Ooh. Yeah, snark in a lot of ways, but not just snark, but the darker side of things where, you know, a movie can't be good if it's not dark and everything ending happily is too cheesy. There was that thought for quite some time. So now it's like with the prequel trilogy, and I feel even with these films that stuff that isn't really dark will really irritate a certain segment of the population, a certain segment of their late teen and adult movie watching experience became that flavor. And anything that's not that flavor just doesn't work unless you're expecting it because it's a Pixar film.
And it's like you got two majority voices in the media aspect. You got your dude bros and the snicker snarks.
That's going to be a celebration t-shirt. The dude bros and the snicker snarks. In fact, I think that's the upcoming Dr. Seuss uncovered novel. The dude bros and the snicker snarks.
But I mean, does it make sense? Does what I'm saying here make sense? Because it's like
it'll be a very vocal segment of people. But again, like popular culture embraced the Avengers, which is like is a happily ever after type of ending, right? Popular culture embraced.
But, no, but modern popular culture did. All Marvel fans liked it. There were some Marvel fans who trashed the Avengers movie and hated it.
Well, okay, here's one of those aspects for you, okay? 2000s wasn't known for Star Wars, okay? 1990s, it was known because of, what was it? It was Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction by Quentin Tarantino kind of revolutionized all the movies you got through the 90s. That whole start at the end and jump around and then give you the very last climatic ending, okay? Everybody rolled with that theme. Through 2000s, the movie was The Matrix.
Yes, yeah. That's what I was going to bring up.
That is a good comparison.
And honestly, I don't think the Star Wars will feel like The Matrix anytime soon. And I think there's a segment of people who in their 20s, and so that's kind of what got cemented in their mind as this is what good filmmaking is. It has to be gritty. It has to have a dark element to it. The hero can't be Steve Rogers because Steve Rogers don't exist. There aren't people that are that good. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I disagree.
And there's so many people that have changed because of the different movies and the different things that have happened. I mean, 9/11, so many different things have changed our perspectives of the world that, you know, we're more open to things that we weren't before. I mean, granted, there are still segments of society that are completely like, no, you know, that's still, we're not going to let that fly. That's not cool here. But there are a lot more places where you walk around and you see, you know, kids with piercings all over their face and stuff like that. You know, I mean, these things that would have shocked us and blown us away in the 50s and in the 80s and stuff like that are common everyday norms now.
Yeah, yeah. And there's even a certain segment of, I wonder, at the teens today who in their middle and high school years have grown up with some the young adult fiction that are a lot of the vampire romances, etc. And I'm not even really talking Twilight, but because Twilight is on the lighter end of that spectrum. But it's or Kim even Harrison's, the Hunger Games. The Hunger Burgles, Games, Burgles yes. Books. The Hunger Games are PG-13, but they are a serious and dark story, and especially the books are. And it's like, you know, how will these are movies that aren't that dark ever going to appeal to people who think that that's what good filmmaking is, or rather that that's what good story making is?
Yeah. No, I.
And have we cornered ourselves into that market now? I mean, like, that's the only good movies we have are pushing the envelope. I mean, it's the same thing with Marvel Comics. You know, you follow one hero and eventually after about 5 years of following him, it's like, okay, they're really pushing the envelope now because he's tackled everything else.
Yeah. I honestly think that it's the middle schoolers now who are seeing all of these Marvel movies and who will be seeing the new Star Wars movies. I think it's them who are going to be the ones who appreciate that storytelling the most.
Mm. Yeah, I think for sure. And, you know, those kids started seeing films 6 years ago. So, I mean, because, you know, think about it. Iron Man came out in 2008. So, I mean, there's that for sure.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what.
Making me feel old.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe. But it's going to be an interesting kind of way to track the, you know, modern culture's reaction to this film. And it is very fascinating to me to see all the different reactions. And certainly Lucasfilm's choice of choosing Entertainment Weekly as their spot to release this information, while I may not be a big fan of it, it's certainly still a big deal. We have, you know, the character names that I'm sure we will be seeing a lot of over the next 3 to 5 years. So, at least. So there's that. Let's jump into a little bit of feedback, before we end today's episode.
Backfeed.
Let's start with an email. This comes from Chris. He says, "Hey, Riley, Mark, and Bethany. While listening to the latest podcast, the subject of the quote-unquote black stormtrooper came up, and I felt the need to say thank you, thank you, thank you. I don't understand why, one, everyone assumes John Boyega is a legitimate stormtrooper and not assuming the Han Luke disguise, or two, if he's a straight-up stormtrooper, so what? I was beginning to think that I was the only person who didn't care about skin color. Love this podcast. Love the podcast and look forward to each week." Cause that was kind of the topic of discussion. It's not the fact of, and Chris, thanks for the email. It was an interesting point, and we didn't even delve into it as deeply as some. On the Full of Sith podcast, they were talking about that recently as well. And I think a good point to be made is it's not necessarily a matter of like ignoring color. It's more of the fact of appreciating differences and accepting that different racial cult identity and cultures can contribute in different ways, and there shouldn't be a moratorium of certain roles on based off race, and that should go without saying, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and yeah, most people understand that, but it's you know, something that evidently needs to be said,
yeah,
to certain people who comment on YouTube.
And I really do question, I mean, are these people going to complain that in Exodus, Gods and Kings, that Christian Bale is playing Moses?
Wait, what's your question then?
Oh, the Exodus Gods and Kings cast. Mm-hmm. They have some interesting people who are definitely not racially Egyptian,
yeah,
or Jewish at all, playing Egyptian and Jewish people.
Yeah.
Do you think that they will complain about that? The same people who are complaining about a
saying.
Black stormtrooper?
Yeah,
probably not.
No.
And that is, I mean, yeah.
It gets with the Fantastic Four reboot coming out. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
Though, I mean, I complained about that one, but for different reasons. It was like, you know, what are you doing to the brother and sister here? You've got one and not the other. Like, that didn't make sense. But at the time, I said, unless they plan on doing like somebody got adopted, which I guess that's the direction they're going. And I think for me, that's all I care about is the story. You know, like,
yeah,
whatever's going on with John's character, it's like, if he's in disguise, or, you know, if racial barriers were never even an issue, I just think it'd be cool that whatever it is, it's in story.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
if he's there, it's because now they've gotten rid of clones and they're, everybody in the galaxy is welcome to come.
Okay, yeah. Or I'm even, it would even be cool if they still see the Empire. Let's say the Empire still exists and they're still pretty, racist/sexist, wouldn't it be cool if he were so awesome at being a stormtrooper that they couldn't possibly rationalize keeping him out?
Yeah, like he's just that good.
Cool,
that'd be kind of cool if they go to that approach.
Well,
let's jump.
Or we could even find out that like the armor on the female stormtroopers and stuff looks like the regular stormtroopers, and we could be finding out that during the OT there were females all over the Death Star. I mean, there's that angle too. I mean, I've always seen the Empire as been male chauvinistic and racist and speciesist. Okay, I've always seen it that way. In Legends, they've rolled with that. But I mean, what if we find out that behind the armor, it could have been anybody this whole time? And the only time it was really ever one, you know, race or person was when it was just the clones. I mean, there's that aspect that they could retcon it and shake our perceptions of what we had all this time too. I don't know where I would feel with that, because there is a part of me that loves the fact that the Empire was just that evil. You know, to me, when Riley first brought up, you know, what was the feeling of watching the original trilogy for the first time, and it was that ragtag group of rebels going against the system, you know, going and rebelling against everything that they stood for. And, you know, it being a racist society, a male chauvinistic society, are things that should be struck down. So in that regard, it's kind of like, you know, I would like that if they kept it that themed, that the Empire of the OT originally was like that, you know, and that it was that kind of evil, that it wasn't equal opportunity at that point, that it is now, you know, like, and having a story that we have a progression there, like, even though if the Empire happens to be bad, like, there's some people still saying, you know, it's good, we've come a long way, and we have all these equal opportunities, and, you know, I mean, it'd be cool to have all this in-story type of stuff, or just as cool to find out that John's just completely hiding, and he's that short guy in the lineup, you know, I mean, either way, I just think that there should be some story-driven aspect to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's jump to our voicemail hotline. Here we go.
Hey, guys. Just finished listening to part two of your Force Awakens reactions, and I kind of had a thought on something you were saying. You mentioned that Yoda said that, what's the line? Once you start down the path, forever will it dominate your destiny. I believe that was it. Anyhow, what if it doesn't necessarily mean that Luke is will always be susceptible to the dark side, but perhaps like what you were mentioning earlier about how his actions cost him his hand, which could now be putting his lightsaber in the hands of someone else, and that may play a part in what we're going to see in The Force Awakens. Just a thought. All right, take care. Bye.
It is an interesting thought. The whole quote is actually, once you start down the dark path, forever will it dominate your destiny, consume you, it will. And that last part was the part that always got to me. It was, you know, consume you, it will. And once Luke starts down the path, and in the novelization of Return of the Jedi, when Luke screams out no, in that moment, he gave over to his hatred. And that always struck me, you know, when I was reading that and following, you know, that line from Yoda's. And, you know, I always took it literal. So, I mean, you know, you throw out an interesting idea there, but I always leaned to that interpretation that I got from, you know, reading that one line and him committing to that one moment and how it meant to Yoda. You know, I mean, how literal was I supposed to take Yoda? You know, I mean, we didn't know at that time, you know, what Yoda was like before then. So it was interesting, you know, now at this point where we've got the prequel trilogy, we've got the Clone Wars, and we got all this aspect of Yoda to kind of add to what we know, it changes a lot of what he's saying. It's like he could be very open with that, not so literal.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, I think that it's one of those things that certainly has the potential if they go that direction with the story in Episode 7, but they don't necessarily have to. So, you know, if Luke Skywalker ends up being like the villain of the movie or something like that, I think that would be a really cool and bold twist. It just depends on how they would do it. Man, that's going to put the wraps on this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast. Episode 156 is in the can. Thank you so much for listening to this week's podcast. Hope you guys are having a fantastic holiday season. We're certainly enjoying our Christmas time. And yeah, if you enjoyed this episode, as always, we do appreciate any and all of those iTunes reviews. If you go to StarWarsReport.com/iTunes, that's a way that you'll find quite simple to jump through and leave us an iTunes review. If you want to contact us, as well you should, as C.O. Bibble in Episode 1 would say,
you must contact us!
And there's some really easy ways to do it. You want to shoot us an email, StarWarsReport@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, it's at Star Wars Report. We're on Twitter, it's at Star Wars Report. We're on Facebook.com/StarWarsReport. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can also do so. It's 858-859-0SWR. Again, that's 858-859-0SWR. We do thank you for listening to this week's podcast of the Star Wars Report. That's going to put this episode in the books. Before we head out, just want to leave you a parting note. If you want to follow us up throughout the week on our personal social media, you can do so. I'm at the Riley Guy. Bethany is at Bethany L. Blanton. Mark is at Illogical Rogue, the number 2. And you can follow us all up on Twitter there. Bethany and I are also on Instagram with the very same username. It's real simple. It's like, you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at the Riley Guy, at Bethany. But you want to follow us on Instagram too, you're like, well, how do I remember what the username is? How do I remember what the username is now? And then you're like, oh, so I'm going to remember it because it's the same as the Twitter. After last week, I've been kind of stuck on the Fargo accent. All right, that's going to put the wraps on this week's podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Rest Thou Softly by Jedi Rita. Summary.
I actually queued up the Rest Thou Softly audio drama while we were talking about
Dude, you should have queued it up to the episode or Order 66 part. That was the best.
What has...
No questions. ...was out, deflecting the bullets. But Drolic knew it was simply a matter of time. He could not think or feel anything anymore. He could only throw his entire being in deflecting those bolts, in the hope that they might possibly outlast the clone troopers. Even if only one of the Padawans could escape. If they could just last that long. Then, amid the clone troopers appeared a figure bearing a lightsaber. The figure strode forward, shrouded in typical Jedi robe. Drolic had seen images like this on many a holonews report of Jedi Knights leading the clone army into battle. It had meant that even in a time of war, the Jedi Code still reigned supreme. Even at the head of an army, the Jedi stood tall. But now the image was all wrong, and Drolic finally understood that it had been wrong from the beginning. The Jedi were never meant to lead armies. And this Jedi, who approached him now, whose lanky gait Drolic recognized, this Jedi, who had been the hero of the war, a hero without fear. He was not a hero at all.
Anakin Skywalker!
He cried out in disbelief. Face impassive, the young knight ran forward to meet him, their sabers clashing. Drolic felt the jolt of the impact through his arms, yet he held strong.
Anyway, yeah, there you go. That's a little sample. Yeah, there you go. There's a little sample. I had my mic cut off for a second there. Yep, that's, there it is. Rest Thou Softly. That was a good time. Pretty proud of that work.
Yeah, dude, I love hearing that. Every time, as soon as Order 66 and that music cues up, the fact that you used the music from the movie, oh my God, man, every time that comes in, I mean, you can even hear it in my voice. I was barely holding back the tears as I was reading that. The Jedi Rita writes some powerful stuff, man.
Yeah.
And then
you threw that music and the sound effects to it, oh my God, when I was listening to it on playback the first time, I made everybody in the house come and listen to it, and I was just sobbing. I was like, dude, this is great. I love this. I mean, it does start out a little rough, but I mean, when you think about it, that was your absolute first time ever doing anything like this.
Yeah.
And about 15 minutes in, it levels out.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. And Kenny, you can tell us in the chat if you've heard it, because I'd be curious, because that was early days when we released that on Solo Sound. So we should consider putting that sucker out on our own feeds.
I would love to, especially considering Nathan and me were both in that. I would love to get that.
Maybe
up
with
on the
a special
introduction,
maybe a special introduction or something of some kind. That would be kind of a cool way to do it, for sure. All right.
Plus, in this age of fan films or fanfics, and there should be more fan films coming too, by the way. But
in this age
of all that stuff, it'd be kind of cool to get Jedi Rita stuff out there again and get kind of that resurgent. I know Nancy from Toshi Station is big into fanfic, as well as a few others out there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, let's wrap up the recorder here. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.